Welcome to the Dive into Reiki podcast. I'm Natalie, and together we will enjoy a series of conversations that explore the journey of Reiki practitioners and teachers from all lineages. 100% Reiki-focused stories, 100% human. Hi, and welcome to Dive into Reiki podcast today. I'm very excited about my guest. His name is Johannes Reindl, and I'm probably killing that pronunciation because he's from Austria. After Felix Furumot, I'm not killing it?
No? It's perfect.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. So he's actually now the successor and the lineage bearer from the Usui Shiki Ryoho after Felix Furumoto's passing. As I mentioned, Johannes lives in Austria. He learned Reiki in 1995, met Felix in 2001 in Germany, and eventually he became Felix's student and was initiated by her as a master in 2017. Thank you so much, Johannes, for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation.
And I was mentioning you the short bio with no weird names for me to pronounce, because I always I start mispronouncing anything. So thank you so much. So I always ask the same question to everyone coming to the podcast. And what was your first contact with Reiki? When was the first time you heard the word or experienced the practice?
Well, the first time I had heard the word might be not have been the same time when I got the first in touch with Reiki. It was in the late 80s, I guess, a very close friend from my parents. She was practicing Reiki at that time. I think she was a second degree student. And whenever I was with her, there was something special when she touched me, right? And maybe it could have been also something else, because we always felt very, very close. And I was just curious, what is this, what she's doing, right? She also was very much into meditation and Tai Chi. And somehow I remember thinking, well, when I'm grown up, I will do what she's doing, because this is interesting. This is fascinating. And another few years later, another very close friend from my parents, she's a Reiki master. And there, I think, more or less heard the first more about what Reiki is. And I got my first formal treatment, so to speak. And yeah, I thought, well, that's it. That's what I want to do. And then 95, I took first degree. And as for many of us in the Reiki community, it was, so to speak, love at first sight. And I continued practicing. That's basically very simple, very easy.
But I love that what attracted to you was that presence of this friend, right? It was her vibe, her presence that was so good and compassionate. I think sometimes we're so fixated in the hands, and actually it was the presence and then that touch that moved you. But yes. It wasn't exactly in a session, right? I love that.
Yes, exactly. It was just being with her, always was and still is always a very important time for me. And I think this has also had a lot to do with the trust I had in her. And somehow things were very easy, right?
I love that. I found the word Reiki on Google. It wasn't as warm or easy to begin with. So I love that. And then obviously you met Felix. And for those of the people watching or listening who don't know who Felix Furumoto is, she was basically the granddaughter of Hawaii Otakata, and she was the bearer of the lineage. And then that lineage, you are now the bearer. So can you explain a little bit what the office of grandmaster is and your role as lineage bearer? Sorry, that is difficult for me to say with a Spanish accent. So people understand.
Well, I will try to do my best. As this, taking this role from, taking over this role from Phyllis Le Furumoto had come to me very much as a surprise. And this is now more or less, 3 years now. I'm still in this process of finding out, what is it? What is my role, right? Exactly that question. What does this mean? What is it that I'm holding? What is the work of the Office of the Grandmaster? So I try to answer this question in a way, connecting with myself when I was not the lineage bearer yet, and in a way of where I am right now. So Phyllis Le Furumoto had become the successor to her grandmother in 1980, when her grandmother died. And together with Paul Mitchell, a student also of Hawaii Otakata and Reiki Master, She formed together the Office of the Grand Master once as a business entity to organize and to hold their seminars and workshops they were leading all over the world, but also as an energetic entity for her work as lineage bearer and Grand Master and for Paul's work as head of the discipline. When I look back, when I had been a first and second degree student, for me, the office of the Grand Master always was a place to connect and to, well, actually the first place to connect when it was about Reiki in my form of practice that I'm practicing and now teaching and holding. And it was the place to not only connect with Phyllis and Paul, but with that community who made a commitment to this particular form of practice. Phyllis Leiformoto and Paul Mitchell also defined this this particular form of Reiki. I know there are many wonderful forms of Reiki around the world, which is beautiful and great that we have so many different flowers in this Reiki garden, so to speak. And Phyllis and Paul were very clear and very committed to define what is this form of practice, what is the practice about. So for me, this always was the number one place with my questions, with my wonderings, with my uncertainties maybe. And they offered, since 2008, I think, they offered OGM retreats. So retreats for the office of the Office of the Grand Master, where all those of the community came together to explore questions. They're bubbling in the community. The community were wondering, and together with the community, Phyllis and Paul not only gave answers, but supported the community to find answers together. So in that sense, for me, the Office of the Grand Master and to connect with them always was kind of a Reiki home to me and a place to go deeper in the practice, to go deeper in the studies, to learn more about the practice, but also to have a kind of a guided process of development, of own personal development. Phyllis and Paul also offered for many, many years, I think since the 80s or early 90s, a workshop for Reiki masters, for Reiki master candidates. So that's basically in very, very short words. I mean, we could speak here for days about this topic, but in short words, that's basically it. And when you ask me what my role and function is, then on one hand, in a very simple answer, it is to continue Phyllis's work, in that I'm now just starting to understand what she had been holding over these many years. Because it's one thing to look at her in the relationship I have with her as being her student and being a student of Reiki, and the point of view I had when I was not her successor yet. But now being in this role and continuing the work, I just see that a lot of things I have not understood before, I have not seen so far. And now I'm just growing into have a larger understanding of that role. One part I think is, and that's what I learned from Phyllis, and that's what she had been doing for so many years, to be present in the community, to be a still point for the community and for the practice, and to call the community together when there are questions arising, right? Not in the sense that always giving the answer, but to hold a space so that the community together can come to a deeper understanding and find an answer together. And in this role, I see, and this is what I see now. Maybe in a year, I would have a different
answer.
You're
allowed to change as many as you want. I've changed my point of view like 300,000 times. Don't worry. It's a good thing, actually.
And in a way, it is, yeah, to hold a still point for the practice and to continue to hold the practice how I received it from her, as she did, as how she received it from her grandmother, to have a continuum and to have a continuity and a longevity of that practice throughout the generations, more or less. That's in very simple words.
There is something that you mentioned that I love, right? And this is because you have to understand, I grew up like with Disney, the Lord of the Rings, like for me, Grandmaster is power. And what I love about you said, and it's very honestly similar to even offering a session or teaching students, you said, I'm holding the space and we come with the answer together.
Right.
And like that for me is like, wow, that is the essence of Reiki practice, even if you're Reiki 1 or Reiki 3, or you work at the office of the Grandmaster. And I think that is very beautiful how you're expressing it. And a great lesson for all of us, even if we are the biggest Reiki master of New York City, that's our job, is just to hold the space no matter what. So I really am grateful for that.
Right. And what in addition to that might be maybe important is to that everyone who comes to the circle, if you want to do these retreats or to do other encounters, that everybody's coming from their own experience and from their own understanding of the practice. And all these experiences and all these different places we are coming from are precious. There's no more or less than. And so do I. I come from my experience. I come from my experience of being a student of Reiki. I come from my experience of being taught and initiated by Phyllis Lei Furumoto. I also bring my experience, this is only 3 years now, but this 3 years of experience of being her successor and growing into this role. And all these voices and all these experiences together, I think, create a space to see more than one individual would see.
That is beautiful. And you have mentioned it a little bit already twice, the process of succession, right? So there is a moment where like you're announced successor and there is almost an embodiment of that practice. I don't know if you can describe a little bit of that moment, how it was for you.
Well, Phyllis and Paul together invited the community many years ago to come together in the beginning in succession weekends, they were called, because there were weekends from Friday to Sunday where the community have met to explore the process of succession or the element of succession and the dynamic of a succession process. And after a couple of these weekends, they decided to invite a certain community who had attended these weekends to meet online on Zoom, because it was easier to travel more, to meet more often without traveling. So I think we started in 2016 to work online, to meet every second Tuesday of the month for 3 hours, with the support of a close friend of Phyllis and Paul, Ben Haggard, who is a trainer and teacher in regenerative thinking. I can't say much about regenerative thinking. I'm a very, very basic and beginner in this practice and in this form. But if you want to Google him, I'm sure you find brilliant information. What it did for me and what I heard for many in our circle is it brought us to a different understanding and a different way of thinking. Because in the beginning, there was this idea, well, it was very simple, Phyllis, you name a successor and everybody's happy and that's it.
That's not human beings. What you're describing has never happened in history.
Right, but this was the wish for many, right? So there was the thinking, well, the work would be easy and we are fine and so on. But that was not what Phyllis had in mind and what she wanted to do. She wanted the community to be part of this process of succession, because she also saw very clearly it is not about the event only where the successor would be present, but also about this whole process before and after, and not only about who is the next in line, but also different understanding of what are the processes a community has to go through when a process of succession is happening. So we had quite some years of preparation together, and I think I can say it really brought us to a different understanding, not only in our brains and minds, but really of a different embodiment of the practice, but also of our understanding of what does community mean for us as a community. And then in March 2019, well, before in February 2019, Phyllis and Paul had called me if I could come to Arizona to serve there as a French interpreter contributor for the community, because there was a workshop planned and organized in Arizona, and there were French participants who signed up, and they needed an interpreter. So they asked me if I could come. I was a bit unsure if this is a good idea, doubting about my French. And Phyllis then said, well, of course, your French is wonderful. And I thought, well, how could you say, right? You don't speak French at all.
She doesn't speak any French, yeah.
So I finally said yes. And it was very challenging. And at the same time, I also know that one motivation to say yes was more the hope that I could see Phyllis once more, because at that time she was already terminally ill and it was clear that there might not be so much time. So I agreed and went to Arizona. And after that workshop I interpreted, there was another workshop held in Phyllis's living room. And we were living in a little hotel close by, and every day in the morning we drove in a little convoy and had our workshop at Phyllis and Joyce's house. Joyce is her wife. And we worked together on to become resources for our system, for our form of practice, for the community. And during these, I think this were 5 days of workshop, Paul always would consult in the morning with Phyllis to see what we would do. And sometimes Phyllis joined us when she had enough energy. And then on the last day of our workshop, Phyllis joined us again, and in this moment, she announced that I'm her successor too in this lineage. It was very much a surprise. I had not at all had something like that in my mind or in my body or in my feelings. Phyllis and I did not speak before that. It was just her recognition, right? And many of those who were present, and or maybe all, I don't remember so clearly, because it was really a very challenging moment, which brought me into a deep, deep process for many, many weeks and months. And many then in the community followed and seen also this recognition that Phyllis had brought. Phyllis and I later had not so much time, actually, because Phyllis died at the end of the month. And ever since I am working on deepening my understanding of the practice, of the community, of these many, many different forms of Reiki we have around the world and these many beautiful encounters we share. But most of it is really, for me, a deeper learning process of holding a responsibility. For this responsibility, I have not yet words, to be honest. I think as Reiki masters, we share a deep commitment and deep responsibility to teach students. And I also see that many masters support and hold in a way of shared leadership the support of the lineage bearer and of this process of lineage bearing. But again, very much a beginner, very, very beginning. And sometimes there are many questions. I don't even understand the question. I feel a deep intuition and the deep embodiment of Reiki practice inside myself, from which then I can answer. But very often I need more time to reflect and ask others for their support. But I think there's time to grow into. And yeah, Phyllis shared and said that she feels that she had prepared me unconsciously over many years. Looking back, I can see now moments which could have been this preparation or which might be this preparation she thought of. At the time, I did not understand it, because at that time I was a master candidate preparing with her. So at that time, everything what I received as teaching from her went to this place while I'm going to become a Reiki master, right? So it was also a very challenging time, because on one hand, preparing with my master for my own mastery, and at the same time, parallel to prepare in this succession courting to prepare for that day when my master no longer will be there. So it was a deep tension in my body and in my whole being for these two processes. Now looking back, I understand deeper what was there going on, maybe in a hidden place. And I think it was good the way it was.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And there are two things I love. First, how you really talk about embodiment, right? That practice bringing all that inside the body, not out there. And the other thing that struck me very much is I know we have to drop the ego, but the reality, a lot of us, when we're feeling insecure, when we don't know, we actually go harder. We don't soften and ask for questions. And I find that a beautiful teaching for all of us, no matter how much you practice. And because you said it, everybody has a very different experience. You're not going to have all the answers someone may have because their path was different. So that humility, or I don't know if that's the right word in English, but to be able to say, I have a deep knowledge, but I can still access all my community. Like, I think that is a very beautiful thing. And it is good to remember as well, even if you're not in your position, but in every position in the community, right? It's okay not to have all the answers.
It's okay not to have all the answers. And not only that, I think it's wonderful not to have an answer. I remember what I enjoyed so much and loved so deeply very often when Phyllis in a circle heard a question from someone and she was deeply listening. And maybe after a while she would say, good question. I don't know. And with this, I don't know, she opened a door to what we call the unknown and started a circle of exploring deeper with the person who had asked the question, with all the others, and go deeper and sometimes finding deep treasures, right? But to open ourselves first to, I don't know, I don't know the answer. And to open that door to some deeper potential, which is there, and not go to automatic and give an answer, right? I think this is something I learned from her. And sometimes I find myself that I can start doing this, but it needs practice. And I also see it needs patience, and it needs also deep trust into this unknown. And I think, well, this is something we are maybe as a community and society not so much used to say, I don't know. I mean, when we go to school, right, and the teacher is asking you a question, your examination, you say, well, I don't know. Well, you're in a different situation, right?
So yes.
To find an answer and to know the answer is very often the ultimate purpose of a question and answer situation. And to some questions, there might be clear answers because it's maybe about information or about something where it's a clear answer is possible. But to open ourselves to the unknown and to find something new is wonderful, is brilliant. And I think when we look at the world right now, this is what we need, to think outside the box in a more, with other words. Yeah.
No, I totally agree. And I think it also implies you do have to practice a system of Reiki, right? Like, you cannot just go to a class, get an attunement, sing, you got like your little paper manual and that's it. Like, the beauty of this is, even if you get the answer to that question, the answer may change. And if not, you're going to get more and more questions. It's like a lifetime. That's what I love about it. Like, I will never get to know the whole practice, right? It's like unlimited in a way. So that's the beauty.
Right. And I mean, of course, one can go to the class and never practice. That's student's decision, right?
Yeah.
I would say,
still a beautiful go to the experience. Class. Yeah.
Exactly. I would say, well, you go to the class, and then the journey starts, right? And it starts with your hands on your body. Becoming a student might mean to have a discipline of doing it, practice, 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 and not only talk about the practice or read about the practice or I don't know, but really practicing it, because this would be like, I don't know, you learn to sing, but you never sing. You only read about singing. This doesn't make sense, right? You need to practice. This is an art, and you need to practice, practice, practice. And it, Yeah, it's a healing art. And this means it's a lifelong journey, a lifelong learning experience. And it reminds me of a very close friend. He's an artist, a painter, and practicing since, I don't know, 50 years or so. And he keeps saying, well, I have to practice every day, right? This is not to, I start learning and then I achieve a goal and then I'm a master or I have a certain degree, like at the university, and that's it. I think these times are over anyway for all of us, whoever had thought this in whatever discipline, right?
Yeah.
Everything is a lifelong journey of learning and experiencing.
I love that.
And this gives also relief in a way, not to be perfect and no need to be perfect.
I know, but it's, we're so scared of not being perfect, but it's freedom. And it's a little bit more real too.
Yeah, exactly. That's more real. That's what I would say too.
But no, I don't know. For me, it's like, it's funny. Like if you were all good, like that idea of balance, like, you know, the only thing that helps you actually find that balance is accepting that you're not perfect, that there are some weird things, and that's what you can work and have fun with. Some days, other days, it's not fun.
Right. Sometimes it's not fun and we need support from others, but it's developing, right? I mean, this is the whole life is about development from the birth till death. This is developing, and for all of us, and that's wonderful, I would say. I would not like to change that.
Good. So I have a couple of questions. One is community, right? You just said look for help for others. So a lot of times, and a lot of my questions are based on emails I get from people who reach out because of the podcast or the books. These last 2 years, let's say, have been challenging. So you really have been mastering these waters, like not in the quietest of time. And a lot of people who actually have an advance, and I'm going to call advance in quote marks, the Reiki Masters feel that they should not need help to navigate the last 2 years emotionally, right? It's like, why am I depressed? Why am I struggling if I'm a Reiki Master? I actually think, for me, Reiki has helped me see my limits and when I need to reach out for help. But you just said that reach out for help. What is your point of view on that? The importance of support, even if you have been practicing Reiki for 10, 15 years?
Well, I would say, I mean, how can I say without being maybe misunderstood, because I don't want to sound rude, but I mean, everybody needs support once in a while, and it doesn't matter how long you practice. I mean, why should someone who's practicing 10 years not would need support, right? And not even that, I mean, I go regularly to my Reiki treatments, to receive Reiki treatments, also in good times, right? When I don't need the support, because it's beautiful, because it's wonderful, because it's the best thing I can do to my body, to myself, right? That's why I do this. And I mean, these last 2 years had been a challenge to everybody.
Yeah, it's and, major.
I mean, how could you not feel, I don't know, depressed, helpless, sad, missing your friends, family because social distancing didn't allow to meet? I mean, how could we, I'm just wondering, how could we so fit survive this time, right? I mean, and in this time, it was even more important than in the good times, so to speak, to reach out to each other and to say, hello, I need support right now. Please, can you help me? And I mean, of course, we are living in a society where it's a lot about me, myself, and I, and to be most independent and to be most successful so that you, I don't know, be part of the survival of the fittest. But honestly, that will not work. It doesn't work for a long time. You get ill, you get sick. How could you not get sick? I mean, we human beings are created to be in community. And maybe we have forgotten that, or maybe we have created a place where we think we can be independent and live alone and don't need each other. I mean, looking back in the when the pandemic here started in Austria, almost exactly 2 years ago, the first few days were quite exciting, I have to say, because I never had been in a pandemic and I never had been.
No, at the beginning, you're like,
wow, what's going on, right?
Yeah.
I mean, after day four, I thought, well, this is exhausting already now. And I had no idea what will come. Nobody had, right?
No, we're like 2 weeks to flatten the curve.
Exactly. And I mean, I'm so thankful for having Reiki. I don't know where I would have ended if I would not have had my daily self-treatment practice. And as soon as it was possible, I went, of course, for myself, for my treatments weekly. And then there were many questions. What do we do now as a community, right? We can't travel, we can't meet. Depending on which part of the world you are, it was easier or harder. And then it happened, I don't know, coincidence, I can't say. Three friends of mine from the Reiki community texted me the same day and said, hey, how are you doing? Hope everything's all right. And I thought, well, that's weird that these three in an hour or so text me and said, well, let's meet for a Zoom party. We called it that time, right? And we met in the evening and had a lot of fun. And after a while, we said, well, maybe we should create something that we could offer to the community. And we were brainstorming and being very creative. And then we said, well, let's meet in 2 or 3 days again. And at our next meeting, we came to this understanding and feeling, well, maybe we should keep it very, very simple. And just invite the community to meet on Zoom and do self-treatment together. And that's what we did. In the beginning, I was a bit doubtful because I thought, well, I mean, self-treatment isn't that something that everybody's doing anyway. But it was also about having a connection, seeing people on screen and hearing their voices. And so it was very overwhelming because from the first Monday we met, I don't know, 200 or maybe more people joined us in self-treatment. And we're doing this ever since, every Monday, 7 p.m. European time. A while later, we added another meeting at 11 a.m. so that people from the Australian time zone and Russian time zone in that area, for them, it would also be a better time of the day. And for me, what I've learned through this is, it was reassuring about the importance of self-treatment and the value and the core of the practice, that this is start with yourself. Start with yourself, treating yourself daily. This is the place where we can grow a relationship with Reiki. And really so that it is our relationship. Not in the sense of to be independent and I don't need anybody, I'm all on my own. That's not it, but to have really, to come close with Reiki. And with close, I mean really my hands on my body daily. Maybe sometimes twice a day or more often if necessary. And to share this in community was really and still is a very, very beautiful thing we do. We're still doing this since February 24th. We're doing this now daily. This had come due to the war in Ukraine. And we're now meeting every day at 7 p.m. and at 11 a.m. And it really, and this is also what I hear from many others in the community, it really supported us in this very difficult and painful time to not be alone, even though we need to be alone and have social distancing and whatever, but also to see each other, to see others practicing together at the same time. We keep this self-treatment circle very simple, very, very clear. Others might say very strict, and that's okay. But the focus is really on the self-treatment.
I think you also do martial arts, if I'm not wrong. You do Aikido, I do Iaido. And basically, I get to repeat the same kata for life, right? Like the same series of movements, very simple. And it's a little bit of a similar thing, but the more you practice, the more depth you have. So I think sometimes we want to add so much, but when you keep it strict or simple, but again, that's very Japanese too, so that's okay. Yeah. And repeating every day, and again, with that interconnection with others, is when we really go deeper into our practice. And right. That leads me to my next question. So I heard you talk about Aikido martial arts and that thing about cutting sharp and center like a sword, right? And I was like, how can that be associated with our practice? Right? How can we make our practice sharp in a good way and focused and centered?
Mm.
Yeah, sometimes I do ask questions that are weird. You don't have to answer. No,
it's a wonderful question. I mean, my Aikido practice and my Aikido practice is, again, I'm a very, very beginner student. I've learned Aikido from Paul Mitchell. I don't have any dan. I don't have any degrees in that. We meet once a year for 6 days, sometimes twice a year. What brought me to Aikido was actually I felt very insecure. I was 18 and I felt physically very insecure. And to come to Aikido was really, wow, an opening, right? And it also, over the years, it brought me not different understanding, but it supported me in my Reiki practice. Again, in the simplicity, the physical part in it. And when you ask me about the sharpness, like the sword, right? In Reiki is, well, I would quote Hawaii Takata, who said, Reiki comes first. And I think when we make a clear commitment, and I know, I mean, about these topics, we could have a workshop for, I don't know, weeks. I know.
Yeah,
it's very challenging to be clear in words in a short time. But when we make a clear commitment to Reiki and to our form of practice that had been passed on to us, and to really deepen that practice through self-treatment, through receiving treatments, through giving treatments, and those who are Reiki masters through teaching Reiki, when this is really our focus and our still point in life, then I think the clarity that comes with it it is then such a clarity that is coming through us, and maybe not from us, but through us, and we are part of it, right? And this is a beauty, and this is an art, and this is a living art, then coming through our embodied practice. I have never found something else where this could land so deeply inside myself. Honestly, after finding Reiki, I stopped looking because I felt, well, this is what I need. And the simplicity and the effectiveness of this beautiful hands-on practice is such a treasure that I'm so happy that so many around the world are sharing this treasure and practicing. I'm not sure if I answered your question, but
I think you did beautifully. Because sharp is a word very linked to swords, but clarity for me is actually, when you say the word clarity, that's the equivalent, right?
Yeah.
And that clarity is not about knowing all the answers. It's just that clarity of practice and action, or the clarity you won't have.
What I would like to add here, and what my experience is, what this Reiki practice is doing also, it brings people to their authenticity, to their true self, and to their honesty, maybe, and to the place where they can easier express that. And that's, I think, what's very, very important these days, that we are true to ourselves, but also honest with the world around us and express ourselves. Not in the way of like a competition, who is better, who is more honest or more truth or more whatsoever, but so that we can come together and create healing for the world, which is desperately needed. I mean, we have a lot of work to do, right? And if I have a practice myself, if I have a still point myself where I can always go to, like a source, right, then I can embody that and I can become a source and a resource for others. And I'm sure we can be the change in that world that's needed.
I love that. And that's quite a hard thing to be honest 24/7, because it can be very scary. So you do need a very strong practice and a lot of grounding.
I know.
Making it easy for me.
Of course it is scary. I mean, it is scary to open our hearts, right? We can risk that we might be hurt. We might maybe risk to find some new truth we had not had the other day, right? We risk a lot when we put ourselves out there. We might feel exposed. But this is a risk, I feel, that leads towards deeper growing. And once we, I think, I'm not sure if this is true for others, but for me, once I tasted this gift of honesty supported by Reiki practice, then I can't go back, right? This would mean I would go back in a cage, maybe, or would hide. And well, sometimes I do a little bit, maybe, or I feel not ready yet to be fully honest. But then I know, well, I had been to this place of honesty. So what is holding me back now? And then the process is starting again. And I think this is another part of a lifelong learning thing. It's not once we have it and then that's it, it's done. I doubt that. It needs to be done and cultivated and practiced. Yeah.
Yeah, I love the words you say, cultivated. And then that I'm thinking, like, as we change, like, we're never going to be fully honest because we keep changing, right? As we shed layers, like, you know, we have to be honest, but also we need to understand that that honesty, that authentic self we're getting closer will shift as well. So it's...
Yeah, and sometimes to be honest might be so simple, starting like, I don't know what to say. And then the door is at least a little bit open already. And then those who are with us can maybe support us in the process, in asking questions or whatever it is. And then we maybe open that door a little bit more. And then it flows. And Reiki will always support us with this.
I love that at the end. Yeah, feeling safe in your honesty. And it's funny, I grew up in Latin America. So even though I'm from Belgium, so I have like a melting pot of culture. But in Latin America, when you say honest, it means telling people what you think about them. And I think, just to clarify for all my Latin American, like, that's where I go. And it took me a long time to understand honesty is about being true to who I am versus I don't need to tell anyone what I think, or, like, you know, there is that. That is funny how cultural sometimes words can be tricky.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just a funny anecdote, sorry. It's just like...
But it's a good point because, I mean, language is a wonderful thing, and very often I just feel it's weird how limited, right, my language is. I mean, I'm happy to speak different languages, but very often it's like, well, even in my first language, like, yeah, that's a good word to use, but I'm not sure if this is really accurate. And actually, if one word, we could have, I don't know, a day conversation if you really speak about the same. So I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. So culturally, and I think also because socially that's has been accepted, but I think it's so beautiful that honesty of the true self, and also a true self that is not so magical. It's just, you know, something you unravel. Yeah. It's a very human experience because I think sometimes, again, going back to the perfection, we feel like there is this perfect being and we just need to work to find it. And that's... Like, yeah, if I only meditate enough, like, I will be perfect, right? So that is also something to let go. I'm a very imperfect person, Johannes. So
yeah, and it's really, I've been there too. If I practice enough, if I do whatsoever enough, then I don't know, one day I'm enlightened and then everything will be wonderful and good and peaceful and I'm in this magic land. And somehow, thank goodness, I gave up.
Me too. And it was very liberating. I have one question I ask also everyone else. And so I always start like, what was your first encounter with Reiki? And the last question is, what was your biggest oops? Or, like, I'm going to say mistake with quote marks, something that actually was kind of an oops, but gave you a big, big lesson or insight into the practice.
I mean, there is one that's a very interesting one. I offered a treatment to a friend. I gave it actually as a voucher as a birthday gift. And he was very excited and very happy. And yeah, let's do that. And so we met. And I shared a little bit, and he already knew a lot what I'm doing and what I'm practicing. And so I shared a little bit in the beginning, and we made it comfortable and started the treatment. And I think after 5 minutes, he said, no, stop. That's too much. And I was like, what do you mean? So now I don't want this. Stop it, please. And, okay. And then, so of course, I stopped and I accepted that, no doubt. And then we went for a walk and we talked and about his experience and his feelings. And it was so interesting for me to hear someone saying, no, this is not what I want. Even though he first totally agreed and was happy that we do that. And it was this very, challenging moment to be with that situation, right? Because I thought, well, what could happen? And he said, well, it was too intense. It was too strong. It was too, no way. This was way too much for me. I did not expect that. And it was a good conversation. And I learned a lot about this. But so far that time, I had not an experience of someone saying, no, this is too much, right? And I think about this very often, especially when I hear ideas, what we all could do with Reiki, send distant treatment to our political leaders, etc., without asking, which is already a little bit weird for me. And just to accept someone saying, no, thank you. Thank you for your offering, but no, I don't want that. That was very intense, very powerful, and very, very supportive for my practice. To understand that Reiki is for everyone, but not everybody wants Reiki, and that's totally okay. There's nothing wrong with that. So that's the first thing that comes to my mind. And another lesson I feel always when I treat someone else or when I teach a class is that I see to a certain extent my responsibility, of course, is that I do the treatment as I've been taught and as it is my practice, and I teach in the way I've been taught and as I understand it. But to a certain extent, my responsibility has an end, right? From a certain point, Reiki is taking over because it's about Reiki, and Reiki comes first. This is what it's all about. And Reiki is guiding the process in this person, in this whole being. And then sometimes to be with someone with the process which is going maybe first more painful, more in this changing process, and where maybe healing or relaxation is not so close to see at the beginning. And then not to let go and to continue to be present and support this person in the process, I find not only challenging, but so beautiful to see that Reiki is doing the work. I'm just the servant, if you want, or I'm just the channel for this. I'm not doing the work, basically. I'm doing very little, in a way. And Reiki is doing the work with the person receiving Reiki, and which is then challenging or interesting when someone's saying, oh, thank you so much for your support. And I feel, well, it's not about me. Thank Reiki if you want, but I've done very little. I just offered my time and my hands and maybe a little bit of my experience, from which I then answer maybe questions sometimes. But to remain in this place of, it's not about me. And I'm totally part of the process, and I'm totally invited to be part of this. I find a wonderful relationship in all of this.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I think actually, it's not about me. It's a great sentence to apply for most of our lives as well, beyond a session, right? Because mm-hmm. we take on so many dramas that are not even us. That is, it's a good reminder.
It's a good reminder. And on the other hand, not to forget, it is all about us, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's our responsibility. It's both. And to know when is which, that's the challenge.
Well, that's where, like, I still get probably 9 out of 10 wrong, but at least sometimes I get one right. So I'm like, you know, it's advantage. But at least it's funny.
One, that's many.
Hey, It's incredible. But I love that last ad. I've been loving your ads. So I really, really appreciate your time and all and you or you into quote marks, not you, whoever it is.
Thank you so much. It was such a joy to have a talk with you. I mean, we never met before, right?
Nope.
Just click and boom, the window opens and here we go.
I know. It's
very wonderful, very beautiful.
I really appreciate that you were so open with me. And before we end, is there anything you want to add that I may not have asked?
Not really. Just let's keep practicing.
That's, again, the best addition ever. Johannes, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Dive into Reiki podcast. You can read a full transcript of today's interview at diveintoreiki.com/blog. If you found this episode helpful, please hit the subscribe button, leave me a review, or just share it with your friends. It makes all the difference. Thank you, gracias, merci,